Hello, everyone, and welcome to the newest edition of the Junk Baller Podcast. My name is Michael Greenwood, and as always, I'm here with my good friend, Kevin Otterbein. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing good. It's Sunday. The sun is...
not out.
Not really out.
No, it is not
out. But... went to church, had a good lunch, and DJ hit six RBIs on Wednesday. So what is there not to be happy about?
Yeah. So if you are a Phillies fan or a Yankees fan, you'll know that the Phillies got swept by the Yankees. Mm-hmm. And it really wasn't even a fun series for any Phillies fans. It was brutal. No. Absolutely god-awful.
Yeah. The first game was a wash.
Yeah.
Total wash, you know. They had the position player pitching the ninth inning of that game.
Yeah.
Which is a total joke, but we've discussed that enough already. The Phillies had their chances in the next two.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. That game could have gone either way, but it just... Phillies are right now in a terrible, terrible vibe, and they can't get out of it. They're in a hole that is just ridiculous right now. They can't... I don't see the light right now. I don't see it. But yeah, then the last game, DJ had six RBIs.
Yep.
And what was it, 6-5 final score?
6-4? 6-4, I believe.
It was not a fun game. Not a fun series.
6-5, yeah.
I'm glad that we didn't go to the game because we were going to go to that Monday game.
Yeah.
But instead, we had little bit of a host, Junk Baller hosted party where we watched the Phillies and Yankees, and Kev was the only Yankee fan because our other Yankee fan didn't show up.
Yeah.
And but Kev was happy, and Kev stayed up to watch the whole game.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of him. Yeah. It was past 9:30.
Yeah. If the score was reversed,
yeah, you do.
I would go to bed.
We also probably would have been a little bit rowdy too. We probably would have gotten a little bit. Like, now the Yankees suck or whatever, but I'm glad we didn't. And, but yeah, your team's doing not bad right now.
Yeah, not bad. I think they kind of stumbled again after the All-Star break, but, they had that road series against Boston, then against the Phillies, and they took 5-6. And they blew the game against the Red Sox, so they probably could have gone 6 straight. They're home against Toronto. It's been a 1-1 series. The main thing is just trying to keep up with Baltimore.
Yeah.
But fortunately, Baltimore has been struggling themselves. So whenever the Yankees have lost, the Orioles have lost. So they're still in it. It's really a toss-up right now between those two teams in the AL East.
Yeah, it is kind of weird seeing Baltimore struggling, given that I think that they're like the best team in the American League. But it's just weird. I think they have all the pieces, but they're just struggling, kind of like the Phillies.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. But, yeah, that's a little recap of what the Phillies and Yankees are doing right now in that series. We were going to possibly do a whole podcast on it, but I didn't want to do a whole podcast on it because that'd be miserable for me.
No.
But we had a pitcher who normally goes 6 innings. He pitched a full 9 innings, and guess what?
Threw a no-hitter?
He threw a no-hitter. That'd be Blake Snell.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know who Blake Snell is, he has pitched, I believe, a total of... I think I saw a stat where it said he has thrown 9 outs past the 7th inning in his entire career, which is absolutely absurd for a guy who's won the Cy Young twice. It's just ridiculous. How can you go into... He's had something... It's very little outs. He's pitched past the 7th inning. He normally pitches 5-6 innings and is actually a decent pitcher. But
well, we've had 2 no-hitters since we last recorded this podcast.
Oh yeah, that's right. Wait, who's the other one?
Dylan Cease.
Oh, Dylan Cease. That's right. Wait. Since the Emma's podcast?
Yep.
Huh. Wow, time flies. Yeah. Holy crap. What was that one like the next day?
Yeah.
Or oh, okay. That's why.
Next day.
Yeah. But yeah. Blake Snell threw a no hitter and it was 9 innings. I think he had 9 or 10 strikeouts and 3 walks, which not bad. 114 pitches from what I remember. I didn't watch any of it. I just remember getting updates saying, no, Blake Snell's got a no-hitter. I'm like, oh, I don't like Blake Snell. Why does it have to be him?
Well, there was talks, like rumors about potential moves with Blake Snell, but
yeah,
the Giants seem to have made a good move not trading him.
Yeah.
Given the last couple of games he has pitched.
Yeah. Yeah. I think hitters are like 8 for 109 or something like that. I'm like, that's ridiculous. But yeah, so our last podcast we just mentioned with Emma went really well. She had a great time. But we apologize for the audio there, people. We had some technical difficulties. We hope the audio will never have that issue again. But we hope you enjoy that podcast. It is already, when we last listened to it, or I'm sorry, when we last talked about it and looked at our numbers, it was already the seventh most listened to podcast that we've had. We've had 25. This is our 26th, I believe.
We've had a lot, yeah.
Yeah, so the fact that we know that you guys are listening to the guest episodes, and so we're going to try to get some more guests on. We have one planned, hopefully, for the end of the month, so we'll see how that goes. But I just wanted to reiterate that we apologize for the kind of bad audio. We admit it, that it was not up to our standards, but we hope you enjoyed the episode for what it was, and Emma had a good time. So a couple more things before in the introduction. White Sox suck.
Mm-hmm.
They just absolutely suck. They lost again last night. As we record right now, we're at Sunday around 2 o'clock, and they have lost 19 straight. Now, when you listen to this, they could have lost 20, or they could have won for the first time in 20 games. Mm-hmm. That is up to whatever happens, happens. But right now, they have lost 19 straight. What's the record, Kev?
They are...
No, what's the record for most losses in a row?
Oh, it's 23?
23 in the modern era, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
By the Phillies, of all teams.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Of course. That's just how it is. Yeah. But I wanted to say something about the White Sox that they actually do well, because they are the worst team right now at 27-85, a .241 winning percentage. We did the math, people. They actually have to have a better winning percentage to not have the worst record in MLB history in the modern era. They have to play better. If they just continue what they're doing right now, they're going to be the worst team in MLB history. But listen to this. They actually are good at a couple categories, and I'm going to tell you which ones they are. They are actually sixth in the MLB in sacrifice bunts. They have 15. Tied for sixth with the Rockies at 15. They're only Arizona, Kansas City, Miami, San Diego, and the Nationals are all up ahead of them. But they're only ahead of them by a couple. So not White Sox. They're not bad at sacrifice bunts. Good for them. And I believe there was one other that, oh, yeah, it was hit by pitch. They are good at avoiding the ball. I where'd that stat go? Where is it? Here it is.
Avoiding the ball or getting hit by a ball?
No, they're good at not getting hit by a pitch. So they want to hit. So they've only been hit. They're tied for the best at not getting hit by the ball. They've only been hit by a pitch 34 times, which is tied with the Brewers and Padres for the least. But, you know, it just means that they want to hit. They don't want to get hit by a pitch. They're good at avoiding the ball. That means they have good reaction time. Yeah. They can't hit because I think they're like second or third in strikeouts.
Oh, yeah, they're good at avoiding the ball.
That's very true. Mm-hmm. So trying to give the White Sox a little bit of credit here, but they are absolutely miserable right now.
Yeah, 27-86. So,
I have to update my...
The modern record, for those of you who don't know, is the 1962 Mets. They went 40-120. So in order to at least tie the record, they had to go 13-34. Which is doable.
It's doable, but they only... that's 13 wins. How many do they have right now?
27.
So they have to almost have almost half their wins of what they have right now.
It's a lot to ask for.
That's lot to ask for in a team that is absolutely terrible. So that's... there's one more thing in the intro that I would like to talk about. So the Phillies just got a sponsor. They just got the Independence Blue Cross on their sleeve. But I noticed something that last night when I was watching them lose to Seattle that really bothers me about the sponsor. Now, I don't want sponsors in general, but this specific thing really bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
It's not uniform. How do I say this? The patch is not on the same sleeve as every jersey. It's on the sleeve of the jersey that the batter faces. So left-handed hitters, it's on their right sleeve. On right-handed hitters, it's on their left sleeve.
Oh, yeah.
That bothers me.
It's exposure.
There's no uniformity. It's all about, it's on this side. I don't know why I'm talking so lightly about this. Maybe it's because I'm controlling my rage. But the fact that I noticed it last night, I'm like, wait a minute. That's what his was on the other side. I'm like, what? That's not right.
It's smart on their part because it ensures that the advertisement always gets seen.
It's getting seen no matter what. I can barely see it on the TV no matter which side it's on. On the TV, I can barely see it. It's not like, oh my gosh, and half the time it's rumpled up or something. I didn't notice it till last night, and I'm like, oh, this is the worst. I hate this. There's no uniformity. I want it to be symmetrical and everything, but no. I'm like, Turner and Harper were standing next to each other. I'm just like, ugh, this is terrible. It's not on the right sleeve. It's terrible. It's just the worst. It's the worst.
Well, to help you a little bit, the White Sox are not the worst in attendance in the American League.
Oh, big surprise.
Yeah.
Big surprise.
So they're not the worst there either.
There you go. Good job, White Sox. You didn't have much to compete with the Oakland.
Tampa and Oakland.
Tampa?
Yep. So the average...
What?
Yep.
Come on. What? Tell me the stats.
Okay. So are you looking by average or total?
I'd probably say total because so I know Tampa doesn't open up certain parts of their stadium. Same thing with Oakland. I don't know what the White Sox do.
Yeah. So in terms of total, Tampa Bay just beats out the White Sox.
Wow.
So they're at 994,065. The White Sox are at 936,960. And then you have Oakland all the way at the bottom at 481,000 for the whole year. That's an average of 9,000 fans per game.
Gosh, I really feel for Oakland fans.
Yeah,
I complain about being a Phillies fan. I have it pretty good compared to the Oakland fans.
Mm-hmm.
I really, if my owner was doing this, I'd be livid. I don't think the city of Philadelphia would take it though.
Oh, and I like the White Sox shirt, too. I don't know if you saw the guy wearing the paper bag over his head. It had, like, the White Sox scoreboard on it, and it said, I don't like this team underneath.
Wow. Did not see that. That's fantastic.
So the more we think about them, maybe they're not the worst team in baseball history.
Yeah, maybe not.
Maybe not.
But we'll see. Yeah. We'll see by the end of the year.
We'll see.
It could be. Hopefully, everyone listening, if you're watching baseball, pay attention to the White Sox. They could be making history in the matter of next week. But yeah. All right. That was our introduction for today. And we are introducing a new segment for our kind of buffer before our junk baller section. We've had the fun fact. We've had top five. We've had trivia for this little section. But we're going to do something a little different. We're going to do a section called What If? And I got inspiration this. I was scrolling through, I think it was either Reddit or Twitter, and someone posted the question, what if like a certain player did something and what would happen? So we're gonna, each and every podcast, we're going to switch turns and if we do what if, but we thought this would be cool. So Kev's got our what if in baseball for today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the relationship between players and teams and ownership has been as tense as long as we can remember, right? And that goes for every sport, not just baseball.
Yeah,
we've had our share of strikes and postponement of games, fights for salary cap, yada yada. In 1994, there was a particular strike where it ended the whole season after August.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no World Series, no postseason, and I feel like it had big effects for a good amount of teams throughout Major League Baseball, particularly the Montreal Expos, who had a couple Hall of Famers on their roster, but then after the 94 season, they just started trading all their main pieces away.
Oh, gosh.
So what I wonder is, what would baseball look like if the 1994 strike did not happen?
Here's the thing. There's a conspiracy theory about the strike. Do you know that? That they didn't want two Canadian teams in the World Series because Toronto Blue Jays and the Montreal Expos were the top two teams.
Mm.
And there was a conspiracy that, we can't have two Canadian teams be in the World Series for this, and so they stopped it. That's one conspiracy theory that I could see that happening, because the Expos were doing really well at that time. So to answer your question, what would baseball look like if the season didn't get canceled? I'm wondering if the steroid era would be as prominent if it didn't happen. Like, would you know how, like, we think that steroids possibly saved baseball with McGuire, Sosa, that kind of streak, and then Bonds hitting the home runs? Would baseball, because did people get turned off by baseball in 94 because of the strike?
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, it was almost like a rhetorical question. Like, but yeah. I'm wondering if maybe baseball wouldn't have been on a downward trend, you know, since then, because I think it peaked in the late 90s, and then since then it kind of slowly teetering into less viewership. So I'm curious if maybe it's that started it, and then the steroid era kind of saved it a little bit, but then people got turned off by it a little bit. What do you think?
It makes you think.
Yeah.
I think the era of power was starting to come in before that, because McGuire and Canseco and Sosa and Bonds were starting to get into the league in the early 90s.
Yeah.
But then after a strike, it does seem like, I think the number of home runs from them really exploded.
Yeah. So who won the World Series in 95?
The Braves.
Braves, yeah. That's right.
The Braves, who benefited, I think, from the Expos not making the World Series next year, because I think Marquise Grissom was on the Expos.
Yeah, it is. So. It is a very good question. These what if questions could get very deep very quick with how
Pedro was on the Expos.
Yeah, that was a really good team.
Yeah,
that was a really good team. Also great jerseys too. I love the Expos are just such a classic.
And I don't know if there'd be a team in Washington right now.
No, there wouldn't be. I don't think there would be.
There would be no Nationals.
Yeah, I don't think there would be. Yeah. 100%. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
All right, people, peeps, whatever people want to call me, call you. I think that's good for what if. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Let us know your thoughts. And I think it also affects the baseball in terms of contracts and just player movement in general.
True.
And how baseball really bounced back after the strike is a really interesting story in and of itself.
Yeah, that's very true. Very, very true. Yeah, let us know what was the thing? Say it again so that way I get it right.
What if the 1994 baseball strike did not happen?
Let us know. So let's move on to our main junk ball section today. You know, something happened on July 30th at 6 o'clock. What was it? Do you know what happened?
I was lying in bed, I think.
Yeah.
Just chilling.
About your bedtime, probably.
No, 6 o'clock.
Not 6 o'clock.
You troll.
Apparently, there was a trade deadline.
Oh, that's interesting.
It happened. Did it happen?
That's why I'm wondering, asking you.
You're asking me?
Yeah.
I guess it happened. According to records, it happened.
Are birds real?
Yes. No. Threw me off guard there. I'm so used to saying no to that. But apparently the trade deadline was a thing this year. I don't think it was that big of a trade deadline.
Yeah.
Like,
we sort of had a segment on it a couple episodes ago.
Yeah, where we thought certain teams would get traded, certain players would get traded. I don't think any of our players that we wanted to get traded, except for maybe Tanner Scott, got traded.
Yeah.
What a joke.
No.
So this is, we're going to go through apparently the trade deadline that happened, and we're going to go through our top five moves of the AL and NL. That happened. Now, the title of this podcast is What Trade Deadline? Because none of the big names got moved. What's the biggest name that got moved? Jack Flaherty?
A Rosarena?
There's no multiple time all-star that got traded. All these guys are on aspiring contracts, or not borderline Hall of very, very good. These are just these are good players, but not great players. Like, Louis, the guys that didn't get traded, Luis Robert, Garrett Crochet, what's the guy from Mason Miller, mm-hmm. Brent Rooker. Those guys are probably the top four guys that should have been traded because they're on terrible, terrible teams, and they are very cheap and very good players.
Very cheap.
But they didn't do it because their management sucks, and probably they were asking way, way too much.
Yeah.
But this trade deadline was abysmal, people. But we're going to recap it for you because that's why we're here for. We're here for you. We're here to give you a great analysis of the trade deadline. So, Kev, take it away with the top five AL.
Well, I'll give a analysis. I don't know how great it will be given the trade deadline that we got, but I will try my best. So I think I'm going to start first.
Are these in any particular order?
No.
Okay, good, because I didn't put mine in any particular order either.
I'm going to start first with my team because it's the one I'm most familiar with.
That's a good idea.
So far he has been doing pretty well. Got off to a hard start, especially against the Phillies.
Yes.
In the series, and that's getting Jazz Chisholm Jr.
That was so annoying.
For a bunch of prospects, because that's what happens now. You trade for prospects, which... I don't know. That doesn't interest me. I mean, a lot of prospects never go anywhere. So when you're trading for prospects, it's almost like you win the trade automatically by getting the star player you want.
Now, what if they had traded Dominguez for Chisholm straight up?
They weren't going to do
that. Exactly. So that's where some prospects matter because you're like, you see the full potential with it. Yeah. Okay. Continue.
He was a guy who they did need to at least help that lineup a little bit because anyone outside Judge and Soto had not been hitting well at all. They've been doing a bit better on the road trip, but it was still struggling. The benefits of Chisholm is that, for one, he steals bases, which is good because other than Volpe, there's like no one else that runs on that team.
Wait, Stanton doesn't run?
Well, he runs in quotation marks.
Oh my gosh, slow motion.
And they could put him anywhere because he has experience playing the infield and the outfield.
Yeah.
Does he have the best numbers? No. The big issue, especially with the Yankees when they were looking into it, was his personality. They were wondering if he would necessarily be a good fit for that organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still trying to feel out whether or not he is. But so far, he's made a good impression.
Yeah. I would agree that he's made a good impression so far.
Yeah. So far, I'd say the Yankees are on the winning end of it.
Yeah.
It's only been a week, but...
I would 100% agree. And I saw it firsthand. He had four home runs his first two games against the Phillies. I think it was a good trade for you guys. But continue.
Yes. Now, I don't know exactly how to put this all in one thing because this isn't necessarily one trade, but I think it's just a team hitting the reset button that I'm counting as my number four or whatever I think is a good trade. The Blue Jays had a pretty busy deadline.
Mm-hmm.
I think they needed to change something because for a while, I think they've been too content on the roster that they have. Like, you know, oh, we have Bo Bichette, we have Vlad Guerrero, we have Kiermaier, we have all these other players.
Springer,
yeah. And it's not going anywhere.
No.
So they trade away a lot of their players. So Kiermaier's not there anymore. He went to the Dodgers. The legendary Yankee, IKF, went to Pittsburgh. Danny Jansen went to Boston. Trevor Richards to Minnesota. Justin Turner, Seattle. And this was another team that got a bajillion other prospects in return. So Jake Bloss, who was a number two Houston prospect, they traded some pieces to Houston. Gilberto Batista, Jay Harry, Josh Rivera. It seemed like they were clearly selling at this point.
Yeah. So is this like a team culmination?
Yeah.
Of like the top?
Yeah, because they had a lot of trades.
Yeah. Well, Kikuchi got traded.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got traded to Houston.
Yeah.
Gosh.
But I think it was necessary.
Yeah.
It was a necessary trade to make because they're not going anywhere this year, and I think they need a refresh without having to get rid of their big pieces. So Guerrero's still there.
Yeah. Guerrero, Bichette, they're still there. Gausman and Berríos have been paid already, but you're gonna have to pay Guerrero and Bichette soon, and they're gonna get pretty good money.
Yeah.
Pretty good money. Like Guerrero's probably gonna get close to $300 million, probably, right? And Bichette, like, he's having a down year, but say if next year he does pretty well, like, he's probably gonna get $200 million. if he's playing well, like, so it's interesting to see what the Blue Jays, they're probably the most interesting team of what they could do, because they could be complete sellers at in the off season, or they could just be like, you know what, we're going to revamp and do it, because they have a lot of talent, but just that division is ridiculous.
Yeah, the division's good, and they just haven't been able to put it together.
Yeah, I haven't been able to put it together. So no. I like that. You put together like a whole team. You're like, I'm just going to put together a whole team's trades, see what they do. Yeah. All right, next. So
I'd be curious to know how this team, how they play moving forward.
Yeah.
Especially next year, though. I don't think this year they're going to do much.
No. They're done. They're done. Finished. Yeah. Finish him.
Well, there was a player, going back to individual players, that got promoted by being traded.
Oh, and who's that?
Eloy Jimenez promoted from the minor league organization known as the White Sox to the Orioles.
Good joke. That's a good one. That's good.
He's hitting .240 with 9 doubles, 5 home runs, 16 RBIs. He was a top prospect coming up in the Cubs farm system, but hasn't super panned out.
The Cubs?
He was a member of the Cubs farm system.
Jimenez?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Who trade was he in before?
What?
Jimenez? Eloy?
Yeah.
He came up in the Cubs farm system?
Yeah, he did.
Who? When did he go to the White Sox?
He was sent to the White Sox in a trade, along with Dylan Cease at the time.
What the heck?
Yeah.
What trade was that? Oh, was that the Quintana trade?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Gosh, what a terrible trade. What a terrible trade.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
He has an upside. I mean, he started off great with the White Sox.
Mm-hmm.
He had 31 home runs in 2019, but he's been diminished by injuries.
Yeah.
The injury bug has hit him hard. And sometimes as a result of running into a wall as an outfielder.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
So I'm wondering if a change of scenery will be good for him and help the valuable piece for an Orioles run moving forward as we go into August and September.
It's a shame that the left field in Baltimore has got moved back, because he could hit probably 50 home runs at that ballpark if he wanted to, if he's healthy. Because that dude's got some light tower power.
He does.
But yeah, it was kind of interesting and sad with the White Sox a couple years ago. You're like, oh, they had some good team, good prospects and good talent. And now it's pretty much all gone. And Luis Robert's the only one left, pretty much. Because Yoan Moncada's hurt every single year. And everyone else is gone. Like, Tim Anderson's not even in the league anymore. Like, come on, what a joke.
And a couple of years ago, he was a big deal.
Maybe we should just call this episode the roasting of the White Sox.
Over an open fire.
Over an open fire. All right, what's next?
Another one which was kind of surprising to me, but I'm curious if Seattle's trying to get him to get some hitting in that lineup. Randy Arozarena getting traded from the Rays to the Mariners, again, for prospects.
Yeah.
As we know, the Mariners, one of the best pitching staffs in baseball, but can't hit for crap.
It's awful.
They have an awful lineup. They can't hit. I see a lot of, like, when I look at the Mariners baseball reference page, I see a lot of, like, you know, 2-1, 3-2, like, very low-scoring games. And they need power because they've allowed Houston to come back in that division.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they need to get someone in that lineup who's going to provide a bit of power. He's on pace for 25-ish home runs. And I think his personality would be a decent fit in Seattle. So
yeah, I think it was a good trade for them. Yeah. I know the prospects that they sent back weren't like top tier, but Randy Arozarena, he's had a tough beginning of the year because he put on a little bit of muscle from what I remember talking about that early on in the year. But he struggled, and then recently, I think the last couple months, he's had like almost a 900 OPS, which is very good. So hopefully he does well for Seattle. I like Randy. He's got a good personality. He doesn't seem to be like the showboater type guy. He just has that, like, I think if maybe I was a Yankee fan or a Red Sox fan, seeing him showboat, it'd be different. But I think because I'm a Phillies fan, I see it and I like it. But that's just me.
Well, the way they carry themselves, the two teams, is quite different too.
Yes. Yeah.
Now this fifth one. This is a little difficult for me to try and figure out because this trade deadline sucked.
Sucked. Absolutely awful.
But I think there was one that didn't, you know, that wasn't necessarily like a huge trade, but one that, you know, I think would be helpful for a team that's being competitive right now. I don't even know how to pronounce this guy's name. you're probably going to correct me in a second.
Okay.
Lucas Ersej?
Ersej?
Ersej? He's a reliever from the A's.
Lucas Ersej.
E-R-C-E-G.
E-R-C. Erkig?
Erkig.
Erkig? All right, let's see. Let's see what Wikipedia says. Oh, man, his middle name. Stijepan? Stijepan. Stijepan. Lucas Stijepan Erkig. Okay, he's... Wow, gosh, what the... He's born in California, so that doesn't give me any hint of how to pronounce that name.
Yeah.
All right, continue. I'll figure this
anyway,
out.
Anyway, he was traded from the A's to the Royals, and I think it's a win-win for him because he could go somewhere that can pitch and not be in the shadow of Mason Miller. But also, he can be a guy that would help the Royals bullpen. Mm-hmm. He has a 3.58 ERA with 43 strikeouts in 37 and two-thirds innings.
Mm-hmm.
His four-seamer averages 98.5 miles an hour. And opposing batters are hitting just 0.67 against his slider. So
nice. That's good.
I feel like that might be a low-risk, high-reward if it works out for Kansas City.
Yeah.
Because they're making a push.
Okay. So here, should I just play it on like audio-wise? See if people can hear it?
Oh, I don't know if people will be able to hear it. Unless you put
Ersej.
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 Let's see if people can hear this. Ersej. Did it pick up on the audio?
I will find out.
All right. Well, it's Ersej.
Yeah.
Ersej.
Yeah.
But yeah. There's no... Ersej. I feel like it should be two G's if it's egg. The English language sucks, people.
Yeah.
Terrible.
We had a whole discussion about that the other day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the names and everything.
Yeah.
You know, I agree. It's definitely a good pickup for Kansas City. I hope that Kansas City does well.
Yeah.
They're like the Baltimore... They're Orioles of last year and the Diamondbacks of last year a little bit. Maybe more the Diamondbacks, I feel like. Kind of like that young rookie guy with Bobby Witt Jr., with some veterans, kind of like Arizona had last year with... but Salvi's doing fantastic. I love it.
Yeah.
Lucas Ersej.
Ersej. Yeah, if you want us to pronounce names, guys, for you, we're not the people you need to be going to.
We can try. Give us a list. We'll do a pronunciation podcast.
That'll be on our Junk Baller Plus. You have to subscribe for it for $2.99 a month.
Do like the worst names in baseball and try to pronounce them. To have a yeah. Have a whole podcast of, oh, hey, this is how you pronounce this. like the first, like seeing Tulowitzki for the first time, I was like, what the freak? How do you pronounce that?
Yeah. And he did get a hold in last night's game against Detroit.
Who did he hold? Did he get a flag?
Yeah. He was holding hands with Bobby Witt Jr. after the game.
Yeah, he's a handsome man. I don't blame
him.
Yeah,
he's good looking.
A handsome man.
He's only 29. Darryl, watch out.
Okay, let's move on. Oh my gosh. All right, is that all your trades?
those are the five that I actually want to talk about.
Okay, yeah, because there's not many that you wanted to talk about just in general either. Oh my goodness, people. Here we go. All right, top five NL. I don't know if I have a top five in order, but I have five trades that I felt like had the biggest impact on the NL conference. Conference, what's it called?
League.
Yeah, the American League. Yeah, here we go, people. We're getting there. I keep saying people now. It's in my head. Okay. Jack Flaherty got traded to the Dodgers for two prospects.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Flaherty's had a bounce back year. Last year, he had a 4.99 ERA with two teams, and he struggled in Baltimore when he got traded. He had a 6.7 ERA when he got traded to Baltimore. But this year for Detroit, he's pitching the pitcher's ballpark. He's he's pitching to a 2.95 ERA, and he's upped his strikeouts to 133 and over in only 106 innings. He probably could have been an all-star if he might have had maybe a couple more wins and a little bit less losses, but he plays for Detroit, and Detroit's not the best team. Mm-hmm. And Scooble's also the head guy there. But mm-hmm. Flaherty hasn't been an all-star, which is surprising given that he was pretty good early on in his career.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he got traded to the Dodgers. Dodgers have had bad pitching this year. They've had inconsistent with injuries. Kershaw just came back. Glasnow's on the IL. I think he might be back now. Yamamoto's on the IL. Bueller was coming back from Tommy John. Dustin May's hurt. Bobby Miller was struggling. And then I don't know any of the other Dodger pitchers off the top of my head. But they've all been very inconsistent with pitching and injuries, so they needed someone who's been consistent this year, and Jack Flaherty has pitched very well. 0.95 whip, which is really, really good, people. It's very, very good. So I think that this was a very good trade for the Dodgers. It's a rental, so they traded two prospects for basically the second half of Jack Flaherty. He's going to be pitching in the postseason because the Dodgers are going to make the postseason, and I don't know. I think he's pitched in the postseason with the Cardinals a little bit, but don't have a ton of stats in the playoff department. Here we go. He has five games, four starts, and he has a 3.6 ERA. Not bad. Not bad. Serviceable for playoffs. He's going to get the job done. I think he's itching for to get that multi-year deal that in the offseason. So I think it was a good trade by Detroit to get. There was some talk that the GM for Detroit should have held on to him and maybe get a qualifying offer from him so that way they can get a first-round pick. But I don't think that – I think they did a better job of getting two prospects back for Flaherty, especially Dodgers prospects, even though the Dodgers seem to – Dodgers still have a top-five farm system after all these trades and everything.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. How do they do that?
Because they're not the White Sox.
That's true. It's not the White Sox. Roasting the White Sox. Yeah. Roasting the White Sox.
Yeah.
Next one. What did you think? Sorry.
I agree. Because this was a team that the Yankees were interested in. They were interested in Jack Flaherty as well.
Yeah.
They end up getting Mark Leiter Jr. instead, which is fine. But I think he's a good rental, like you said, for a team that needs starting pitching. And that's what the Dodgers need, given the injuries that they've had.
I'm glad you brought up the Yankees almost getting him, because apparently that trade fell through because the Yankees saw something medical that they didn't like.
Yeah.
And the Dodgers were like, well, we'll do that. Because apparently Nestor was possibly going to be traded.
There was rumor about Nestor being traded. I don't know if it wasn't for Jack Flaherty or not, but there was a possibility he would be on the trading block, and they ended up not trading
him. So there we go. There was a possibility that Flaherty would have been a Yankee, but now he's with the Dodgers on the West Coast. Yeah. All right. Next. This is a guy that I wanted the Phillies to get. But, of course, the Phillies didn't do anything that I wanted them to do, even though I liked – we'll get to that later. That's one of the last ones I have. But Tanner Scott got traded from the Marlins to the Padres. The big thing about this trade is that the Padres bolstered their bullpen with a couple other trades, but they traded away their number 2, number 4, and number 5, along with their number 24 prospect for Tanner Scott and Brian Hoeing. But Brian Hoeing's just an average reliever. But they've traded away their 2, 4, and 5 prospects. They're top in their farm system. They traded away 3 of their top 5 prospects in their farm system for a guy who's not going to be on the team next year. Mm. I think that's a little bit... Now, they said that the... one of the guys was struggling. The number 2 prospect was struggling this year, and so they kind of almost gave up on him. But I still am kind of baffled by how much Marlins got for Tanner Scott there. Marlins, ridiculous. They got a ton of prospects. They also have only $13 million, I think, on their salary this year.
Really?
For the rest of the year.
Who are they paying it for?
The $13 million? No, $13 million total for their entire roster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, how much are they paying these guys?
Well, they're all rookie contracts and arbitration guys. I think their highest paid is like $2.5 million. I saw that on Twitter the other day. I was like, that's ridiculous. Like, Otani's making... It's interesting. But I thought that the Marlins might have gotten the better end of this deal than the Padres. Padres are kind of going for it again. It's kind of interesting how the Padres have... when they traded away some guys last year, like they traded away Soto and they traded away, they let Josh Hader go, and then they got, Dylan Cease, Luis Arraez, and then they got Tanner Scott. So I'd watch out for the Padres. I still think they're going to suck because it's Padres. That's what they do. But I felt that the Tanner Scott trade was a little bit of an overpay for him. I don't think Tanner Scott's that worth that much. But that's what the market. That's what it was. That's what the market was. What do you think?
Do you know how good the Padres farm system is?
They were really good, but I think because they've traded away a lot. I mean, they've traded away CJ Abrams to get Juan Soto the other year, yeah. and Mackenzie Gore. Like, those were two of the top guys, but they got in the Soto. But then I think in the Soto deal with the Yankees, they got one of your guys' top prospects. Oh, they got Michael King.
They got Michael King. In yeah, that trade.
And there was someone else too. But in the prospect, we were like, oh. I think the Padres, I can't remember what they where they rank on the prospects list, but their farm system used to be the number one yeah. for a little bit. But I know they're struggling a little bit now.
Yeah. I can't put a thumb on the Padres
yeah.
as an organization. Like, yeah. It's like 1 year. It's like, on one hand, it looks like they're like selling when they like trade away a couple of their star players, but then they're bringing a bunch of other star players in
yeah.
after a short period of time. It's almost like they have little patience for trying to like grind it out. It's yeah. like it's something doesn't work out after a year or two. Oh, they're gone. Except for like, you know,
yeah.
Machado's still there. And
Bogarts and Tatis will be there because those guys are under contract yeah. for a while.
Yeah.
But it is interesting to see because Cease has a couple years of control. I think this year and next year under control. But then a lot of the other guys, I don't know what's gonna happen. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how they play it out. But yeah,
I think a lot of the mentality is they're trying to fight against Big Brother in LA.
Yeah, yeah,
and they want to be LA a little bit.
I feel
but
like,
different.
I feel like Toronto and the Padres are very similar in how they're now that I think about it. Like, they have a lot of promising talent. Padres have maybe worked out a little bit better than the Blue Jays, I think, maybe. But like, there's a lot of payroll. At least with the Padres, there's more payroll invested in it.
I would say that the Blue Jays are inherently better, and I mean that in terms of like the roster they start with.
Yeah,
the Padres, a lot of their guys are imports from other teams.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, 100%.
I feel like the Blue Jays have had developed teams better from within mm-hmm. than San Diego has.
Yeah, no, I would 100% agree. Okay, so that's the second trade. Third trade, I can't believe I'm actually saying this is one of the biggest trades in the top five in the NL. But Josh Bell getting traded for cash considerations to the Diamondbacks was a top five trade for me.
I love cash considerations.
Yeah, it was. So it was supposed to be a player to be named later or cash considerations. And I believe they just decided, oh, we'll just do cash. So Josh Bell has gotten traded the last three trade deadlines. Last year when he got traded to, let me double check right here. He got traded to Miami. He ended up doing really well for Miami. He ended up batting 270 with a 818 OPS with 11 homers and 26 RBIs just in 53 games for them. He did really well for Miami. He killed the Phillies too. So it'll be interesting to see how he does with Arizona because he's kind of just that first baseman kind of veteran guy now that is just kind of almost kind of being a travel. What's it called? Not a traveling
journeyman.
Journeyman. That's what it's called. Thank you. That's why we're a team. That's why it's not just a one-man show. It's a team. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how his dynamic works with the Diamondbacks. They're pushing for a playoff spot. They're not as good as they were last year. They've had some struggles pitching and staying healthy, but they got Josh Bell. And I can't believe I'm saying I can't believe that I have Josh Bell in a top five trade in the NL. But that's how it is. Josh Bell is. He's a good hitter. He's got some pop. You know, he's not gonna light the average up with 300, but he can hit the ball out of the ballpark, and that's what people are looking for right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Marlins need cash because obviously their payroll is just too high.
Yeah. Yeah. How are they gonna spend all that money? Josh Bell is a player I've generally liked. Especially when he was with Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
He was a really solid guy with Pittsburgh. And then he got out of baseball purgatory there and jumped around, and now he's in Arizona. Yeah, a good piece for a team that's a third wild card spot right now.
Yeah. I hope they don't make the playoffs. Yeah. I don't like them
and,
right now.
And it's a win for the Diamondbacks because they're literally paying the Marlins for him.
Yeah.
Cash considerations. Oh, we're just going to pay you money for this guy.
Yeah. When I was doing research on this, I was like, I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm putting Josh Bell, who's not really even like a top 100, 150 player, 200 player, but it's a top five trade acquisition by someone because it probably has the most impact.
Yeah.
That's just in my opinion. Okay. Number four, talking about Carlos Estevez. Phillies acquired him from the Angels for two prospects, two pitching prospects. They have, they've been doing, I've heard that these prospects, George Klassen and Samuel Outergary, they are on the up and up, and they might be in the top 100 soon in terms of prospects. So there was some talk that maybe the Phillies overpaid, but here's the thing. I haven't heard about these guys at all, and I'm a pretty good Phillies fan. You know, I don't know every farm system guy. There's definitely Phillies fans that know farm system better than me, but I haven't heard about these guys. They weren't the top prospects. If they work out, I'm okay with it. That's fine. But right now, the Phillies are in win now mode. All right, we need to go win now. We can worry about possibly a fourth or fifth starter down the road with these guys probably will turn out to be, or bullpen pieces. And Carlos Estevez has been a good relief pitcher for the Angels for a couple years. Now, last night, he pitched two innings, and in the second inning, he started struggling in the extras because he lost his fastball location. Also, the umpire didn't help him out.
Yeah, I saw that.
But the Phillies lost that game. All right, the Mariners didn't win that game. The Phillies lost it. I still like Estevez as an acquisition. I think they asked too much of him to pitch two innings in It's not too much to ask him to pitch two innings. That should be doable for a relief pitcher. Yeah. But it's not. It was anyway. That's not the point of this. I think that Carlos Estevez is a good acquisition. I think it'll be very good for the Phillies bullpen, who has been struggling mightily.
Yes,
in the month of July, they had a 6.7 ERA, yeah, which the previous 2 months I would believe was below 3 or 2. Both months before that. So I definitely liked this trade. I wanted Tanner Scott more than Carlos Estevez, but this is also a good acquisition. The Phillies also made another trade for Tanner Banks, and we got rid of Gregory Soto and Sir Anthony Dominguez. So we made some good moves in that sense, where we got rid of players that were struggling for us, and we got guys that have been doing well for other teams. That was it. But overall, I like the Carlos Estevez trade. He's 20 for 20, I believe, and saves this year. Let me double check, make sure I got that right. I was looking it up last night. Yeah, 20 for 20. Not 20 for 20. He has 20 saves, and he's pitching to a 2.38 ERA. I like that. I'll take that. That's great. Yeah. He's not hitting 100, but he's hitting 95, 96 with a good slider. I'll take it. Mm. I'll take it for the Phils.
Yeah. No, a bullpen was a weak point. I just read this while you were talking about, since the All-Star break, over their last 13 games, the Phillies have blown 6 leads of at least 3 runs, which is more than what they blew in their first 71 games of the season. They needed bullpen help.
Yep.
Yep. And they met an immediate need, and Estevez can fill that need. I mean, last night was not a good game.
No.
But hopefully that was just a hiccup, and he'll...
We haven't had a good game in a while. The last weekend against Cleveland, where we had a couple home runs, that was the best game we had. But even then, God, it's so miserable. Miserable being a Phillies fan. What was I going to say? There was something about the Phillies. Oh, yeah, the Phillies, the pitching early on in the season was the best pitching staff in all of baseball. Not even close. Mariners were close to it, probably. Okay, let's move on to my last trade. And this one I didn't like because it reminded me of when the Atlanta Braves won the World Series, because they got Jorge Soler from the Giants. They also got Luke Jackson, who also was part of their World Series run, I believe. Jorge Soler got traded back to the Atlanta Braves from the Giants, and I don't like this at all. I like this trade in terms of it's a good trade for every team, but I do not like the fact that the Braves got Jorge Soler, and it's bringing back vibes of when they won the World Series. I don't have much else to say, but that was a very impact. When I saw that trade light up my screen, did not like. What do you think?
I think your thoughts exactly mirror mine.
It's definitely a good move for the Braves. They needed some offensive help, which we never thought we'd say. Their offense has been absolutely awful.
It's not been good. Their pitching's been carrying them.
Yeah, which is surprising. They don't even have Strider. I'm surprised that the Giants actually got rid of Soler, because they signed him to a 3-year deal And I thought that the Giants were going to – the Giants made a lot of moves, and they traded away a couple guys. Yeah. But Solaire's one of them they got rid of right after half a season. And he went back to the Giants, and of course the Giants went back to the Braves. And the Braves got a team-friendly-ish deal for Solaire for the next couple of years because he has two more years after this.
Who did the Giants get in return?
The Giants got Tyler Mastek, who's a lefty reliever for the Braves. He's a major league guy. And then the Braves' number 17 prospect, Saban Ceballos. Know nothing about the guy.
Mm.
Nothing. But Solaire's hitting 240 with 12 homers and a 750 OPS.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, but he's also playing in San Francisco now. He's playing with a better team in Atlanta.
Yes.
I think his numbers will go up a little bit.
Yeah.
So those are my top impactful trades. I am sad to say that that's how little in terms of star power was traded. Everyone, I'm sad. I'm sorry that we can't tell you that Luis Robert got traded to the Phillies or Mason Miller got traded to the Yankees or the O's and Garrett Crochet, who kind of hurt himself with the trade. He said, "Oh yeah, I'm not pitching in the postseason unless I have an extension." Dude, you have no room to talk as a freaking pitcher. Like, that turned off probably a lot of teams. They're like, "Oh, we're not going to trade for you." Let us know your opinion on the 2024 trade deadline. Did it actually happen? You know, was this actually real? Like, are birds real? Like, is the trade deadline real? You know, or was this all, you know, a conspiracy? Who knows?
Yeah. I think we're going to be seeing more of these types of trade deadlines moving forward because this is a long-term consequence of the new parity in baseball.
Yeah.
When you have more playoff teams in it, when you have teams that are sitting around 500 fighting for a wild card spot, three wild card spots.
Yeah.
I mean, there's six playoff spots in each league.
Yep.
Six out of 15. So as long as you're there, like just on the edge, everyone has a chance.
Yeah.
And if you have a chance, why would you trade away your best players if you want to make a push for it? So if you look at the wild card standings right now,
I'm looking at them right now.
You have, let's see, you have like in the American League, you have three teams that are just outside of five games right now. So the Rays, the Astros, wait, that's not right.
Red Sox, Astros, and Rays.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Because they have the O's and Yanks, they're tied.
Yeah.
So yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. So they have the Red Sox, Astros, and Rays all within five games of a wild card spot.
Yeah.
And the Rays kind of got rid of some guys, but then also added some guys. They were like, "Yeah, we're going to add some. We're going to get rid of some. See how it goes."
Yeah. And the National League.
Yeah. National League. Like,
that's
wild.
Up for grabs.
That's wild right now. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams within six games. The Cubs are probably out of it. They traded away some people. But the Reds, I don't know what the Reds are doing. They traded away Frankie Montas, but they're only 5.5 back. The Giants, kind of the same thing. Like, they trade away some people, but they still could be in it if they get healthy, 4.5 back. But Pittsburgh, 2 games above 500, 2.5 back. Cardinals, 2 back. Mets, game and a half, or half game back. Yeah, half game back, the Diamondbacks. It's going to be that. It's just too many teams.
Yeah.
There's a lot of teams. Like, the Cubs are one game further back of a wild card spot than the Braves are from the Phillies in the division.
Yeah.
And we think that the Braves are close to us in the division because they're only five back. So that puts into perspective with the Cubs being five games under 500 and only being six out. That's not a big lead.
No.
That's not. With this many games left. Now, this was the last month. I'd be like, there's no way. Yeah. But that's not a big lead. I don't expect the Cubs or Reds or Giants to make the playoffs, but that's just, it's interesting to see. So, trade deadline happened, apparently. Who knows?
Yeah.
And that's our recap of that. And so now we're going to close it out with Kev giving us a hot take.
Okie dokie. So recently, I don't recall if it was in between the last episode recorder or the episode before that, the Hall of Fame ceremonies happened.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, totally. Wow, I've been so out of it.
Yeah, me too. But one thing to look ahead to is who will be introduced into the Hall of Fame in 2025.
Oh, yes.
And I think the one name that stands out is Ichiro.
Yes.
This will be his first time on the ballot. And he was an absolute phenom when he first came over here in 2001.
Yeah.
He made a huge splash. He's a 311 lifetime hitter.
Like a cannonball splash?
And he's the MLB single season hits record holder. Absolutely crazy.
Yes.
There's been a trend in unanimous Hall of Famers recently. That was unprecedented in baseball before. Not even guys like, you know, Babe Ruth and Ty Cobb and all of them.
Mm-hmm.
All the Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, they never got unanimous votes. But over the last few years, now you've seen like Mo get it and Jeter.
Just Yankees.
No, I think there's going to be a non-Yankee in 2025.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to say that Ichiro will be the third unanimous Hall of Famer.
I don't see it. So the reason why I don't see it.
Is it the second half of his career?
No, it's not that. It's because there's always that one or two writers that just are like, no, we can't have this guy be unanimous and be better than this guy.
Well, they had those guys from Mariano and Jeter, too, and they still...
I know. Oh, I think the Yankees have a little bit of a bias, in my opinion.
Not for Jeter, maybe for Moe.
For Moe, yes.
For Moe, yes.
Jeter, I was surprised. Yeah. I was surprised.
I was honestly surprised about that, too.
Yeah. I could see, because Griffey didn't get it,
but that was before.
Yeah,
Mariano.
I think it'd be very, very close. Like it'll be like almost. He'll be almost unanimous. It'll be like one or two votes.
Yeah,
just for those writers to be petty, because it's just a bunch of old boomers. I know we sound like boomers a lot of the time on this podcast, but it's a bunch of old boomers that are writing for these. Now, they have a lot of the voters have actually, there's been a lot of new voters and adding more of the analytics side to it. But I don't see it.
The all-time baseball hits leader?
I want to see it. I think he should be unanimous. Ichiro's a huge, huge icon in so many ways. I just don't think it's going to happen because I want it to happen. But I don't think it's going to happen.
So you're thinking the one guy who writes for the Delaware County Courier or something. I don't know what the newspaper is.
It's going to be like, some rival. Yeah. It's going to be some rival team for the Mariners, like the Angels or.
Of course, it'd be the Angels.
Yeah, it'd be the Angels. Like, oh no, I can't vote for him. Yeah. Don't like him. You can't have him be better than, you know, this guy and this guy. You can't give him more votes than this guy. And that's how he talks. He's from Southern California. Same for the Angels.
Yeah. But I just disagree. I think now we're going to see more unanimous Hall of Famers because Mariano and Jeter opened the way for those to happen.
I want to see it. I just don't see it.
And those old, and I have contacts, and those older guys are retiring and dying off.
Listen, I just said I want to see it, but I don't see it. And I have contacts on, so I can see pretty clearly.
What if I take them out?
Then
will you be able to see as clearly?
I can't see anything then. Yeah. I don't know why I'm talking like this. I need to go to bed, and it's 3 o'clock. Okay. Anything else?
That was all I got.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay. So to recap, people. And I say people because I'm talking to all of you. Let us know what your trade deadline recap is. You know, let us know what your thoughts are. Was this a terrible trade deadline? Did you actually like this trade deadline? Did your team do well? You know, let us know. And is Kev wrong on the hot take? Do you agree that Ichiro will be a unanimous Hall of Fame inductee? He's going to make the Hall of Fame. That's a given. But let us know, people. That's just to annoy Biscuit. So, thanks for listening, everyone. We hope you enjoyed, and we'll catch you next time.
Stay cool.